Hey guys, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Robbie.
Well, hello there, Garrett. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you today?
I'm good. We're wearing matching hats.
Yes. We're doing the hat twinsies thing.
Yeah.
But if we were wearing the same shirts, then I would worry. But yeah. I'm not worried.
I'm not worried. Because, you know, this is the official Delta Flyers hat. This is the uniform. We have to wear this hat.
That's just part of it. Exactly.
Exactly. It's kind of like the Starfleet uniform. It's like when you're a Delta Flyer, you have to wear the trucker cap with the logo. Okay.
So this cap is basically like our comm badge. We always have it on.
Yes.
Right?
Beep, 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 boop, beep, boop.
For those of you listening, we are now touching the logo on our baseball caps, the Delta Flyers logo, as if it's our communicator. That's what we're doing and looking like idiots right now. Okay, so Blood Fever. This is the episode that we're...
Blood Fever.
Blood Fever.
Now I'm getting a little hot.
Are you feeling a little...
Yeah, okay. I got the fever.
Got the fever?
Yeah.
What's that song? I got the fever. Who sings that? I don't know who sings that fever.
Nancy
song.
Sinatra. Fever.
Yeah.
Fever when you hold me tight. You give me fever.
That's the one.
Boo-doo. Yeah. I got it. I got the fever.
I thought you were going to keep going. I was ready to riff with you. Okay.
I'm no.
No?
No, because I'm very focused on this.
Let's not delay. Let's go right ahead and head to the couches to watch this episode.
This hot fever
episode. We'll be right back. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for bonus segment, What Do We Remember? All right, everybody. We are back from watching Blood Fever.
Yes, we are.
Goodness.
It was a fever, wasn't it?
Let's just jump right into it. Let's start with our synopsis, our poetry synopsis. So let's hear your haiku, and then I'm going to come up with my
limit. I feel particularly inspired this episode.
Yeah.
With the romance, all the love in the air.
Yeah.
For some poetry, some lover's poetry.
Let's hear it.
Okay, here we go. Here's my haiku for Blood Fever.
Yeah.
Wow, this is awkward. Balana has the Ponfar. Paris is the cure. There you go.
Yeah, look, you got all coy at the end. You did your little coy shoulder shrug thing. Yeah. All right. Nice. Nice.
It's the
very
Ponfar.
Very short and to the point. And okay, here we go. Limerick for Blood Fever. Vorik begins his Ponfar journey. It's Torres he's chosen to marry. Although he pleads his case, she bites Paris's face. Fever purged by duel filled with fury.
Oh, nice. That was good. That was
you like
a good
that one?
Yeah.
Okay,
good.
Good. All righty.
I love our poetry. I think we captured some of the true essence.
I just think that there's a theme in this season three episodic recap stretch of episodes. Macrocosm against that virus. Ponfar is arguably a disease or contagious
some kind
type
of fever.
So blood it's fever. Just all these things that remind us of the current state that we're in.
in the world. I think everything reminds us of the COVID this year. Everything
pretty much
connects. Yeah.
Pretty much.
So Andrew Robinson directed this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I did remember that. I remembered that. I thought he did a great job too. So Andrew Robinson directed, and who wrote it?
Lisa Klink.
Lisa Klink did.
Yeah.
Lisa Klink, writer, and Andrew Robinson director. Great duo. Both did a great job. I thought the script for this episode was super strong. I thought Andy's directing was great. So, score to 1 to 10. Let's start right there. Just out of the gate, 1 to 10. I'll go first.
Go.
I'm going to give this, and I said this to Rebecca before we came back to record. I was like, I don't know if I'm biased because I had more to do in this episode or if I'm really seeing things clearly, because I thought it was a really good episode. Like, I really did. I thought I thought the direction was really solid. Like, it was clean and amplified moments, and the camera moved nicely, and there was action with the rock climbing and all the cave stuff. There was comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It involved mostly our cast. I mean, the guest stars were minimal, which normally I think is better. I like it when our cast is kind of really featured and it's spread out. I thought it was spread out nicely. I would call this a solid 8, maybe even a close to a 9 for me. I thought this was really good.
Wow. I really did. Yeah, I'll give it a 7.
Okay.
7.5. I do think you're a little bit biased.
Yeah.
I think that Andy Robinson definitely did a good job, because there's some very interesting camera angles used throughout this episode.
Yeah.
Where he didn't do the typical, you know, what a typical person would come in, and that a director that's phoning it in. All right. He didn't phone it in. He definitely did his homework. He prepared meticulously, and it shows, you know, some of those camera angles are definitely very unique. So
very unique. Yeah. I thought it was
a great job for sure.
Very memorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the things that I didn't like, they're going to be talked about in the do-over section of the bonus material. So
okay.
Talk about it then. Yes.
All right.
All righty.
All right. So first,
let's dive right in.
Diving right in. Mm-hmm. So we're on the bridge.
Yep.
And we pick up some readings of gallicite, which is a very rare substance that could help us refit our warp coils. Everybody's very excited about that. And this reading of the gallicite, you know, Chakotay says, are there any people there? You know, could this belong to, before we go in grabbing, you know, precious minerals, like make sure we're not stealing from anybody.
Yes.
Nobody's there. Just, they do get some readings of an abandoned mining colony, maybe some tunnels or something.
Some ruins. They see some ruins, right?
Yeah.
And some tunnels, right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But not enough to make us ignore this nearly kiloton of gallicite that we have located. So we go down there. But before we go down there, we go to engineering. And oh my goodness, right off the bat, Vorik and Torres are working
they're working upstairs.
Yes.
So in engineering, but they're upstairs, which I thought was a really interesting choice. I realized later that it's a private place.
Yeah.
Very smart to stage the scene up there, but the way the scene evolves. But we don't normally shoot up there. It's very rare that we would take the cameras all the way up. It was not easy to get equipment up there.
Agreed.
Because it was just a ladder or that tiny elevator thing, but it was tricky. So, you know, that was a strong choice to shoot upstairs, I thought.
Right.
Yeah, but they're doing, checking some readings, and Bolana says it looks like, you know, these tunnels are there, and some other people were interested in mining this stuff, the collapsed tunnels. She says, you know, Tom has a lot of rock climbing experience, so we should bring Tom. I was like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, really? When did Tom ever have rock climbing experience? Like, what? Okay, I mean, sure, I guess so, but I, you know, maybe I was trying to climb out of prison in New Zealand penal colony or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I have a theory on this that I'm going to talk about later, also in the bonus material that I'm not going to talk about here. But that's so Vorik then declares kunant solik, which is basically his desire to mate with Bolana, and I just love Bolana's reaction. She's like, what? She's completely broadsided by this, right? So
yes, he says, I wrote the line down, let me take this opportunity to declare kunat solik, my desire to become your mate. She's like, what? And he says, in human terms, I'm proposing marriage. Her response is, this is quite sudden, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought that was a very clever exchange.
It was.
And he thinks their differences would complement each other.
Yeah.
He says, and ultimately she's like, nope, no thank you. And he gets really mad. You start to see, yes, this is the ponfar happening.
Yeah.
And he gets really mad. He grabs her by the throat at one point, won't let go.
Right.
And she punches him.
Well, it's not a punch.
It's the old
the old palm of the, yes, the palm of the hand right up to the chin, which ended up dislocating his jaw, actually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but that's what he gets when he grabs somebody that obviously is not interested in being grabbed by him.
That's right.
That's what you get. Yeah.
You don't grab people.
You don't just grab random people just to say, look, you're going to marry me. And if the other person doesn't want to marry you, then you're going to get a hand palm to your chin, you know? So that's what, that's what Vorik gets. A little hand palm.
That's what he gets.
Present.
Ends up in sick bay.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up down in sick bay, dislocated jaw, like you said. And, so B'Elanna's down there to check on him. And then the doctor asks them if, you know, he could have some privacy.
Right.
And, he starts to ask, you know, Vorik some questions. And, he says that, you know, this Pomfar is a severe imbalance in his brain chemistry. That's what's going on.
Right.
And that you could die from this, that, if he doesn't deal with it, if he doesn't somehow figure out a way to let this run its course in a healthy way, an outlet for this, we'll find out later some solutions, but he's got to deal with it or he could die.
And it's interesting that, you know, they talk about how private the Vulcans are about this whole thing. Like they just don't even want to talk about this to anybody. Like they just want to keep this to themselves. And everything the doctor tries to suggest to Vorik, you know, he kind of just shrugs it off and doesn't want to have any of it. And he eventually just, he raises his voice. And clearly this is the effects of Pomfar. And Vulcans don't scream and yell like that unless something's going on with them. And it's usually Pomfar that causes the type of emotional outbursts that we see. So Vorik finally convinces the doctor that he is going to try to use meditative techniques to deal with the Pomfar. Because, you know, option number one, finding a person to be the mate did not work. So option two would be to use these meditative techniques. So the doctor agrees. He puts a cortical, what does he put on him? He puts a cortical stimulator?
A cortical monitor. Cortical monitor, and that you're confined to quarters.
Right.
And one thing that was in the scene I love is when Vorik says to the doctor, you know, I hope Lieutenant Torres is not too upset with me. And the doctor's response was, well, with Lieutenant Torres, upset is a relative term.
That was a good line.
Yes.
Good job, Lisa Klink. Good job.
Yeah, good lines in this episode.
Yeah, for sure.
So then the doctor asks Tuvok. He consults with Tuvok.
Right. This is after Vorik has left, of course. Yep. Vorik is gone. Now he's in the office portion of the sick bay, right?
Mm-hmm. A little time jump, and the doc has asked Tuvok to come down. And Tuvok says, you know, he cannot talk about this.
Yeah.
He can't divulge Vulcan secrets, and he doesn't know specifically what's happened with Vorik so far. So for multiple reasons, he can't talk about it. And the doctor is getting frustrated, and he says, you know, you Vulcans are almost Victorian in your attitudes about sex. You know, you're super uptight about this. And this is a natural biological function. Like, why can't you talk about it?
That it's logical to talk about it. So the doctor even uses Vulcan, you know, terminology. He's saying it's logical to talk about something that's natural. And then that's when Tuvok says there is nothing logical about the Pomfar.
Right.
It is a time when instinct and emotion dominate over reason. It cannot be analyzed by the rational mind, nor cured by conventional medicine. Anyone who has experienced it understands that it must simply be followed to its natural resolution. Three options. Three options. Number one, taking a mate. Number two, ritual combat. Number three, intensive meditation. So meditation is the path that
he's
chosen.
Doing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tuvok says, you know, please don't interfere with this, doctor.
Right.
Please, you know,
let him do his, let it run its course, basically.
Yeah.
Right. Then we jump to the transporter room. We have Neelix, Tom, and B'Elanna ready to go. And boy, is B'Elanna ready to go.
It's like she had a whole pot of coffee and ran in here.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, all of them are in these fancy silver, shiny, spandexy kind of climbing suits, these adventure suits.
What did those remind you of?
I don't know. What?
That episode where Tuvok had to train the Maquis recruits and they were wearing those kind of similar.
Yes.
That's what you guys are wearing. You guys got repurposed. I mean, they're not exactly the same, but I'm sure they use those and just kind of add a little that extra stitching or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
didn't recognize that. That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we're all in our climbing suits. We've got some ropes with us. You know, Neelix is there with us.
Why? Because he worked in the mining, a mining colony? Is that what she said?
She said something like Neelix, you know, and Lieutenant Torres talked to Neelix. He may have some experience with this or something like that.
Yeah. So
Neelix is along.
Right.
He lives along. I don't know about his climbing ability. Clearly, Tom Paris has a lot of climbing ability, you know, that we all know about how a climber he is.
I cannot wait to talk about bonus material stuff right now. I have so much to talk about this. My goodness.
So we talked to Johnny Phillips a couple weeks ago, and he, I had talked to him. I don't know if it was when we were talking, but I recently, anyway, Johnny had said to me that he was a big climber before Voyager. He actually was seriously into rock climbing. Like, wow. That was his main hobby, is he would go out when he lived back east and do all this rock climbing. And he had gotten very advanced in that. And then he took a fall and got quite hurt, and he stopped, like, full stop. He decided, you know, this is something I could die doing. And so that's interesting. I didn't put that together, but yeah, Neelix is part of the climbing team, which is probably, he was probably the most in real life, the most experienced with climbing of all of us, because I'd never done any of that. So.
Speaking of real life and Ethan Phillips,
yes.
Did you know that when he was in seventh and eighth grade, so middle school, he was on the football team?
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he, you know, my thought would have been, all right, maybe he was running back, right? Or something like that because of his stature. No, he was an offensive guard.
Was he really?
He was offensive lineman. And he told me that he loved it. And the problem was, because when you're in seventh and eighth grade, everyone's about the same size, right?
Yeah.
But then once high school came around, everyone else on the offensive line got bigger and he remained the same size. He didn't get any bigger. And so therefore he couldn't continue his football playing career. But he told me he loved it so much. So.
That's funny. He's a hobby guy.
Yeah, he is.
Ethan Phillips. He during Voyager, sorry to sidebar here a bit,
sure.
But during Voyager, he played saxophone.
Yeah.
He took saxophone lessons and became very, very good at it and played, like open mic nights or something, jazz nights at a club in town eventually.
He did
hang gliding with Tim Russ. He and Tim did all the hang gliding. That was a big thing for them, and the rock climbing. And Ethan has always been he'll get into some hobby and he will really obsess about it.
He hang glided with Tuvok?
Yeah. Those guys were hang gliding. You
Tuvok
don't remember
and
that?
Tuvok and Neelix hang gliding. I'm a little bit jealous of that pairing. You know, I think that we need to, actually we have done something athletic together.
What do we do?
We skied together.
Oh, we did. That's right.
Yeah.
We've been skiing together.
We've skied together. In Utah, we skied together.
That's right.
This was during
Film Festival we did.
Yes, Slam Dance.
Yeah.
In Utah. And we took a day to go skiing. I remember this. So
All right, we digress.
Yeah, we digress. Let's get back.
Okay, so
Planet Surface. Neelix.
Planet Surface,
Torres and Neelix, Tom and B'Elanna are now beamed onto the surface, and they see the ruins of the colony, which obviously intrigues Paris. Paris is like, whoa, look at this. And then B'Elanna's like, that's not our mission. Let's go.
She's still on caffeine.
Yeah, she's just all looking.
Yeah. But they do notice, they say, you know, these ruins are only 50 or 60 years old, but it's strange how fast they've decayed. That seems unusual.
Yes.
Not natural in some way.
Correct.
Anyway, so now we go into a climbing sequence where they rappel into a tunnel or some hole and, you know, collapse tunnel or something. And then the tunnel opens up to a giant deep cavern.
Yes.
And I do remember practicing this rappelling. I do remember we had to do this ahead of time and go do some lessons on stage, come in on days off and, you know, work on some of the rappelling and things. I remember that.
That sounds fun. I would have loved to do that.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It kind of pinches and squeezes here and there, but you know, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're climbing down this big cavern. Neelix's piton breaks and he falls, which takes Torres down with him, and they both hit the ground pretty hard. Neelix is definitely hurt.
Mm-hmm.
She's bruised, but okay. And she pops up and she is furious with him.
Yeah.
Blaming Neelix, and she's like, oh, all of a sudden just, and I'm like, calm down. Like, yeah. It's not his fault, you know?
You're overreacting.
You're overreacting. Mm-hmm. Something malfunctioned. And mm-hmm. I go to hold her by the arms or something and calm her down. And all of a sudden she bites me right on the face, bites Paris on the face. And he's like, what are you doing? After she bites Paris, she disappears.
She's gone. She heads off on her own, right? So then that's when Paris calls up to the bridge.
Yep.
And we see Janeway and Chakotay there. And that's when they learn about what happened. And
yeah,
Tom
Paris
says,
goes, she's
and then she bit me.
And she bit me.
And then she bit you.
And there's looks all around the bridge. Everybody's like, what?
I'm sorry, but those are just three words. But Beltran played that just perfect. I mean, just the way he said that the pacing, the tone, yes, was right on the money.
Yeah, it was very funny.
Yeah, I loved it. It was so good.
All the reactions were great. And and Paris even says, She seemed to be enjoying it.
Yeah.
In a Klingon sort of way.
Sort of way.
and then it cuts to Tuvok and he's like, he knows what's going on.
We got to start using that on our real life. You know, I should start asking you, like, wait a minute, are you enjoying this in a Klingon sort of way? You're like, no. I'm definitely not enjoying this in a Klingon sort of way. I'm just in a regular sort of way.
Just a rare.
Yeah, just regularly. All right. Now we're in Vork's quarters.
Yep.
Okay. So, the first thing that I noticed, I don't know if you caught this, but at one point, pretty early in the scene, Vorik says, I believe I approached her, and then turns to the left away from Tuvok. As he turns to the left, you can see his eyebrow is coming off, and they didn't catch that. Yeah, and no. I've seen that before on Tuvok too. The top of the right eyebrow for Vorik was just
kind of peels up.
It's peeled off completely, which is not how it's supposed to look, right?
No.
It's supposed to be part of your skin. So a little bit of undersight on the part of the I guess who would that be?
Who would that be
the makeup department? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is so dark in there. You know, it's so dark in that set.
It's very dark.
It was just
there's a lot of dark
candle.
Scenes, by the way. I
very
would say
much so.
There's a lot of dark scenes in this episode, too dark sometimes, mm-hmm. I think. You couldn't see people.
Yeah, well, you definitely couldn't see Tuvok later in the caves because of his darker skin, right? I mean, he was literally just in the
disappeared.
Shadows. Yeah, he disappeared. Yeah. You couldn't even see him. Tuvok basically is talking to Vorik.
And he says to him, I apologize for interrupting. It's my fault, you know.
Yes.
He's very Tuvok totally gets what Vorik is going through, wants to give him the space and the privacy. Mm-hmm. But he says, I apologize, but I need to ask you
a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm. And he says, was there any physical contact? And I need you to describe exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And as Vork goes through it, he realized he did touch her face. And then he held on tightly and he felt like he couldn't let go.
Yeah.
Like he needed to not let go. And he didn't know why. He just had that impulse. Mm-hmm. Tuvok says it was a telepathic mating bond.
Yeah.
A Vulcan telepathic mating bond.
He was initiating a telepathic mating bond.
Yes.
It didn't get completed because of the palm to the chin, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
That stopped it, but at least the beginnings of it were happening.
Yep.
And then, you know, we jump to the cave interior after that scene. And now Chakotay and Tuvok join Paris. Neelix is sent back up to the planet's surface to then be sent up to Voyager to be worked on by the doctor.
And Tuvok and Chakotay are in those sexy little shiny silver suits.
Yeah,
they because got you can't, I guess you can't come to the planet unless you got your shiny silver suit on.
Very important.
Very important because it's dark in there. And how will you see each other unless you got a shiny suit?
Right. So Tuvok, Chakotay join Paris on the search for Torres, who's run off on her own. And they do find her. They find her, and she has discovered an active power system that was built by the colonists. And she's so excited and still on caffeine.
Clearly. Very proud of it, too.
Very like, proud.
I found it.
Oh, yeah.
I did this.
Very territorial and very, you know, just emotional about it, right? So Tuvok informs Torres that she is experiencing a condition known as Ponfar. And I love her reaction. She said, "Puh, what?" "Puh, what?" She doesn't even finish it. Which I almost feel like she would know. She would know what Ponfar is, shouldn't she? I mean,
I would think so.
Yeah, it was almost like, you know,
it's maybe she was a little delirious from the, you know, the effects of the Ponfar.
Could be.
Yeah, because later on she's losing her memory completely. Right. You know, it's really affecting her brain function.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe all that's right. What was going on.
Okay. All right.
Yes, and she's like, as she hears this news, she's just like, you know what? I just want to be left alone. I just want to be left alone, which is part of the Ponfar instinctual experience.
Right.
Just as that happens, the rock people appear.
You call them the rock people?
I called them the rock people because I didn't know who they were yet.
I call them camouflaged alien, is what I call
them.
Nice.
Okay.
All right.
They look like rocks. They look like
they do. Well, they're
rocks.
Yeah, because of the coloring of their uniforms. Definitely
their uniform,
rock-like.
Their skin tones and facial features almost look like rocks. They blended right in.
Yeah, the rock people.
The rock people appear, and they've got weapons, and they even ask Chakotay. They're like, well, why are you armed? You know, if you came here in peace, why are you armed? And he says, it's you know, standard
protocol
for us. And they said, can we look at the phaser? And and he looks at it and he asks about the tricorder. And then he hands it back, and they seem to trust us for a minute. And some seismic activity starts. Some of the caves start shaking.
Yeah, they have an alert. They have a little thing on their belt, the aliens, and it makes a sound when there's some seismic activity is about to happen close by. And very calmly, the alien says, that wall is unstable. You know, be careful.
Be careful.
And so there's an alien who kind of jumps down and realizes that a wall is about to collapse near or maybe on B'Elanna. So he tries to move her out of harm's way, but she takes that as an aggressive act and starts fighting him, like just out of the blue, and is knocking him basically unconscious, it seems. And
knocks him down, grabs his weapon.
Yeah, it just goes crazy. She's a berserker. But this is where I got a little foggy. I was like, well, what the heck happened? Because you start grabbing her, saying, no, B'Elanna. And then you push her and that guy out of the way. He knocks her down on the ground. You're on the ground. And then she looks down, and that guy's gone. He's disappeared, and so has Chakotay and Tuvok. And
everybody's gone. The rock people.
Why are you still with her? Because you pushed her out of the way. You should be the only person segregated from everybody else, I thought.
So it was there was definitely some confusion in that moment. I think that was intentional because the rock people, the camouflage rock people, just sort of disappear suddenly.
Yeah.
And they've taken wherever they went to. They've taken Tuvok and Chakotay.
Right.
So now it's just Paris and B'Elanna alone.
Yeah, but it bothered me because I couldn't make out. I just didn't understand the action. You know, the series.
It felt like there was a rock person near B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Paris and B'Elanna go to deal with him. So that rock person's down.
Yeah.
And then the other rock people take Chakotay and Tuvok off to wherever they live in the rock.
Okay.
And because I feel like because B'Elanna and Paris were dealing with this one rock guy who got knocked out, that's why they weren't taken. That's why they weren't you know, they just disappeared. B'Elanna's fighting them, got a weapon, they got to get out of there and take the two guys that they have. So that's kind of how it was definitely chaos, a bit of confusion, but I bought that.
Yeah, you justified it. It's okay for you. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
I think so.
Let's move on then.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Now we're in sickbay. The doctor has stabilized Vorik's serotonin levels. Vorik basically feels like he has humiliated himself and Tuvok, another Vulcan, by making what should be private very public. And he does not like that. He's not happy. Then the doctor, in the next scene, they're at the resort program. The doctor,
The doctor
pleads.
The doctor in sickbay actually pleaded to. He said, "Please, just trust me. I think I have a solution. Please trust me."
Mm-hmm.
And so then we cut into the resort program and you see Vorik decided to listen to him and see what he's talking about.
Yes.
And the doctor says, this is T'Pel. This is
not T'Pel.
What did he say?
He said, well, the first time I listened to it, it sounded like he said, here is T'Bla.
He sounded like he said,
here's T'Bla. Like he just didn't even finish it. But then I rewound it. It's T'Pera is what it is.
T'Pera.
T'Pera. T'Pel is actually Tuvok's wife, I think, in the show.
Oh.
So, but it sounded like T'Pol is on Enterprise. Yeah, so there's T'Pel, T'Pol, and T'Pera, which is the holographic Vulcan mate that the Doctor has programmed. But it really, the first listening of this, watching of this scene, I heard T'Bla is what he said. Here's T'Bla, but it was T'Pera, actually.
T'Pera, yes. Mm. She is a holographic Vulcan female.
Yes.
And the
who's clearly
says,
mute. She's clearly mute as well.
She doesn't speak anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the doc says, look, she can help you solve your immediate problem.
Yes.
Give it a shot.
Vork is definitely against this idea right off the outset.
Yeah, he's like, how can this work?
It's not gonna work. She's not real. And you don't know about this because you're also a hologram. So you don't understand the matters of the physical is what he's trying to explain to the doctor. Yeah. Right. And the doctor's like, you know what? Don't knock it till you try it is what he's trying to say. So we basically think that he does try it. We don't know. We leave that scene.
We leave that scene, but he seems to agree.
Yeah.
He seems to agree. And then the doctor says, when he says, okay, the doctor is standing close to T'Pera, between T'Pera and Vorik.
Yeah.
And and he goes, oh, good. And then he's smiling. And he's looking at them both, awkward pause. And he goes, well, then I'll leave the two of you alone. And he steps away. But it was a wonderful moment of the doctor not realizing that they can't continue if you're standing there, Doc. So step away, please. It was fun.
It was fun.
We go to the tunnels after this, and Para says to B'Elanna, he says, you know, I know what that biting the face means. Hmm. He lets her know that that's something that Klingons do as part of a mating ritual, and I thought it was interesting. I noticed a pattern in this episode with Tom getting close to B'Elanna to try to talk to her, persuade her over and over multiple times. But I started noticing, you know, this happening and I was like, is he flirting? Is he testing her? Was he competitive with Vorik or something? Like, why is he trying to get so intimate physically? And I don't know if it was the staging of Andy Robinson or what.
I think it was the staging of Andy Robinson. And I like this entire episode, I kept thinking, I hope Roxanne and Robbie had breath mints or brushed their teeth before this.
Very close.
Good Lord. They're practically inhaling each other's air. You know, that's how close you are. But basically, yes, we talked about this before. This is anti-Paris. You are repelling the advances of a woman, which is, you know, very honorable of you. But I want to say, though, this is just a random observation. With the Sims beacons, it really lights up how many dust particles are on stage 16 in the air. It's to the point where it looks like it's raining. You know what I'm saying? It looks like it's rain. That's how much dust and debris is just floating around on stage 16. I'm just wondering how compromised all the actors' lungs are after working on that set. My goodness.
Tunnels in that stage was a very dusty stage.
Very, very dusty.
The dirt they put on the ground in the tunnels was almost like powder. It was very fine, so it would kick up into the air. You're right.
My favorite part of this scene was when B'Elanna like turns your face to the side like that and says, I've picked up your scent, I've tasted your blood, and your face is to camera, and you just look like she's just manipulating you like a little rag doll. You know, it's just like she's having her way with you in a way, you know.
Paris did have a line in this scene which I was like, oh my god, I can't believe I had to say this line, where I say, B'Elanna, this isn't about the gun. This is about sex. And I was like, oh, man. Can't believe I had to say that out loud.
That's, it was good. It was good.
Yeah.
was good. I will say, but your sideburns look very good in this episode.
No, thank you.
They were very well cropped, and whoever did your makeup that day
put those on.
Yeah.
Well, I like the scene because it was a side of Paris that I'd been waiting for mm-hmm. a couple of years, where yeah. he's not the womanizer. He's making very noble and heroic choices here, and he says, "Look, I'm your friend, and yeah. your judgment's been impaired,
yeah.
and I'm not going to do this."
Yes, season one Paris would have been naked already by now.
Yeah, yeah, and he's definitely grown and changed, mm-hmm. and I think this is really who he is. Mm-hmm. All that other stuff was very much of a show.
Yeah,
and yeah. He says, "I'm not going to do this with you," and she says, "You know, this is just so hard to fight this feeling.
The urges are too strong." Yeah,
yes, and it's so hard to fight. And Paris goes, "So are you telling me I'm impossible to resist?"
Yeah, that line.
I like that was a good one. There's some good lines.
Lisa Klink. Good job, Lisa Klink.
I know. So that was a nice scene where it seems like Paris is definitely drawing a boundary, mm-hmm. and he's saying, "No matter what, I'm not going to, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do this with you. I don't, you know, I know what you're dealing with, and we got to get you back to the ship. Let's get out of here." Right. That's what we have to do.
Right.
Anyway, we cut to the rock people now in their little lair. They've got our hostages.
And they're asking a lot of questions. They want to know about everything. They want to know about Voyager, the propulsion systems, the weapons, sensors, medical technology, scientific advances, artificial intelligence. And that's when they scan Tuvok's arm. And this is great trivia, guys. For all you Voyager fans that have trivia nights, you could say, what type of artificial implant does Tuvok have in his arm? Mm-hmm. And guess what? He has a fake elbow joint. We don't know that until now that he has a fake elbow joint. I didn't mm-hmm. know that. Replaced after being injured in a combat simulation. Mm-hmm. But we also learned that the invaders attacked the colonists. This is where the ruins came from. The head alien rock person wasn't even born when this attack happened on these colonists. Some of the colonists were lucky to escape into the mines, and that's who these rock people are, the descendants of the escapees, basically.
We also learned the name of these people, the Sakari.
That's correct.
Yes, we didn't know that. We've been calling them rock people.
Yeah.
Now we know they're called the Sakari. So
we will stop calling them rock people now. So now
I'll try. I may still call them rock people.
And so basically, Chakotay does make some progress in diplomacy with the Sakari. Because everything that they say, Chakotay sort of has a little something to come back with, but not in a aggressive way, in a helpful way. Chakotay just says, "Look, we can help you hide yourselves better. We mm-hmm. detected your Gallicite. I'm going to show you how we detected your Gallicite so you can prevent that from happening the next time somebody else comes around." And so mm-hmm. the guy goes, "Okay, you're going to be monitored the entire time that you're helping us do this, but well, we're game to hear what you're going to show us." So,
yeah.
There seems to be some.
I like these aliens because they seem, you know, so often we come to a planet and there's always some bad guy or something, you know, somebody pretending to be nice, but they're not really nice.
Yeah.
And this feels like some aliens, I got to say, on this planet that are fundamentally good people and nice people.
Yes.
And, you know, they're just scared because they
have
been attacked by some invaders.
Yeah.
Which those details will come up later in the episode. Mm-hmm. But they're scared to be attacked again, but they're good people. So I thought that was really, really cool to see these kind of aliens.
Refreshing.
Right? Yeah, refreshing.
Normal aliens who are out to dominate the world kind mm-hmm. of a thing, or galaxy.
Back in the tunnels, we see Paris and B'Elanna again. And there's another seismic activity and mm-hmm. the tunnel collapses. The wall collapses, and the weapon that they had gotten from that one Sakari rock person mm-hmm. Is now buried under the rubble.
Yeah, the weapon that you wrestled away from Torres earlier that you were carrying, somehow you dropped it or something
in the tunnel collapse. Right. Yeah, it was lost in the tunnel collapse. Right.
And she kind of freaks out about that.
And she sort of pounces on me.
She
pounces on Tom, and she says, "You've never been hard to get, Tom." And he says, "Well, I'm making an exception."
Yeah. Oh, Lisa Klink, keep on going with your lines. We love them. Okay.
But she goes on and on to really reveal what seems like a lot of truth and honesty. Mm-hmm. And she mm-hmm. says she's noticed all of his looks and his jealousy when other people gave her attention, and his invitations to to do things together. And so it sort of fills in some things that may have happened off screen where these two have noticed each other and have Tom's even asked her out a few times. And
but we haven't seen that before, no, except for the one it. There was the one question you said you asked her to do something and she turned you down. That was in a shuttle. Do you remember that in one of the earlier episodes? But that's it. And also earlier when you're in the scene with my gosh, we just reviewed this episode, the one with Morena in it, and Vorik is there saying, "Oh, I
Alter
found
ego.
This. I found a nice little place for us to sit." You didn't look jealous there, you know, when she walked away with him. So
maybe a little bit, but yeah, this is all new information. All this stuff that's happened off screen that she talks about, and she admits finally, she says, "I have wanted this for so long."
Yeah.
Which I'm like, what?
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she starts kissing you and you kiss her back.
Yeah.
So your very first kiss, when you pulled away, there was a saliva, there was a saliva string. Did you say
that? Oh, interesting. No, yeah, I didn't.
Again, that the way it was lit and how the Sims beacon showed every particle of dust.
Well, that kiss also showed romantic, that saliva now, string.
But I'm just saying that that's what I noticed. This is the random stuff that I notice, right? The one little, but that was the first kiss. The second kiss didn't have any saliva.
Okay, good. We got cleaned up after that.
It was better. Oh,
I did like Tom's line at the end of the scene where they do start to kiss and then he pulls away and he says, "I hope after she's revealed all of this stuff," he says, "I hope someday that you'll say all of that to me and mean it," because he doesn't believe it right now. He thinks she's just trying to manipulate him and that she's in this bonfire, and he's like, no.
Which pisses her off too, because she's like, "Get away from me, leave me alone," you know?
Yep.
So that's the end of that scene. We're back to the resort program where the doctor comes in. Vork has obviously called the doctor over. We don't know it yet, but Vork is basically manipulating the doctor and telling him.
He seems
great.
Calm. Yes. He seems relaxed. He says, "I'm fine now. Thank you. That seems to work." And he says, "Please don't make a record, any kind of medical record," because the doctor says, "Oh, I can't wait to put this in a report and put this into the medical record of this new treatment for Pomfar." And Vork's like, "Please
don't
no.
do this. Yeah.
Don't, it's my privacy. Please don't."
So he doesn't do we jump to sick bay where the doctor is talking to Janeway and he's saying that the treatment is working. Vork's biochemical readings are stabilizing. Janeway asks if this treatment will help B'Elanna as well. And the doctor agrees he has to come up with a certain, you know, formulation for B'Elanna's treatment. But yes, he believes it can.
He says, "You know, there's not much that I could learn about the Pomfar and Vulcan mating rituals, but," he says, "there's copious amounts of Klingon mating data." Copious amounts, which I thought was funny.
Yes, and we learn one fact, that fracturing a clavicle on the wedding night is considered a blessing in a Klingon marriage. So.
Yes. One of the fun facts about Klingon mating rituals. So now we go back to the tunnels and B'Elanna she's in bad shape. She's very weak. She can't even remember what's happening.
Well, it looks like she's been passed out or something, because she kind of wakes up. She's very disoriented. She doesn't remember anything that happened before.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Chakotay breaks through the rubble to rescue Tom and Torres. And so upon reaching the surface, the team is trying to hail Voyager, but there's no response. So we're a little perplexed by this, and that's when Tuvok turns to Paris and says that he must help, and I say help in quotations, B'Elanna resolve the Pomfar. Can you see
you
that?
You must help now, Mr. Paris.
You must take one for the team by disrobing all of your clothing and
right here in the
right
woods,
here in the woods,
jungle,
in front of Chakotay and I, and we will rate you like the Olympics with little signs, you know, 8.5.
And they step and Paris agrees.
Yeah, he's right. Like, well, because he only agrees for one reason, because he says to her, Tuvok says, "If you don't do this, she's going to die." That's plain and simple. We can't get back to Voyager. She's going to die on this planet surface right now.
Yeah.
And Tuvok agrees to take one for the team.
Tuvok does. Paris does.
Yeah, sorry. Paris agrees to take one for the team. And
B'Elanna planet.
Yes,
B'Elanna. Lock one on the planet. And yes, B'Elanna Paris goes over to B'Elanna, and B'Elanna goes, and Tom's going to explain, you know, "Hey, I'm doing this to save your life." He's going to go into the whole spiel, like, this is just, doesn't, you know, this doesn't count. And she goes,
She should have put her finger on your lips. Yeah. You know how they do that always? Yeah. And just, yes. But she put it on her own. She leads you away to a little private area, right?
Yes.
And I one of the funniest moments for me in this is when she, you know, you're unsure what to do right now. You're just
sure it's a spot. It's mm-hmm. a Klingon and a Ponfar situation. Yes, I don't know what
you don't know.
And we haven't even dated yet. She turned right. me down.
She's, right. But she, you know, she's already revved up and ready to go. So she starts, she initiates, she begins, and you hear her growling. And so you're like, maybe I should do. And so you growl too a little bit. Was that you growling, right?
Yes,
that,
a little bit.
Okay, that, yeah. Then you're like, argh. I mean, that really, that did it for me, for sure.
It's funny.
But before you really get down to the nitty gritty, you are interrupted and rudely tossed off of B'Elanna by Vorik. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, he throws you with amazing strength.
He's a Vulcan.
He's a Vulcan. They have really, really powerful arms, I guess. So he calls for Tuvok. He doesn't call. He screams for Tuvok. Lieutenant Tuvok.
Yes.
And he declares what I guess it's Kuna Kalafe is what I wrote down.
Kuna Kalafe. Yes.
Which I thought. It would sound like Hakuna Matata, but
Kunut Kalafe.
Yeah,
Tuvok explains it's a ritual challenge in order to win Torres's hand in marriage.
Yes,
he wants to fight Paris to the death. Mm-hmm. That is what it is.
Yeah,
and of course Paris is going to lose this.
Right,
like he's fighting a Vulcan. Of course, you know.
But Chakotay stops this. Chakotay goes, "Wait a minute! Did you disable communications?" He starts putting pieces of this puzzle together. Mm-hmm. And Vorik comes clean. He's like, "Yeah, I had to disable communications, everything, transporters, everything. Shuttles, you name it. In order for me, nothing is coming between me and my mate." And at that point, Roxanne, with some of the most emotion I've seen coming out of her, she's like, "I am not your mate," and she is just chomping at the bit, you know. And I love.
And she chooses herself to fight.
Yes, yes, yes. And she says, "If anyone is going to smash your arrogant little face in, I will." And remember, she called him a Vulcan Patak earlier in the caves when she's, you know, when you mentioned to her, if we, you know, we can go back to sickbay, or there's also Vorik, and she calls him a Patak. But now she accepts the challenge, and Tuvok says, "Well, she does have the right to choose her defender, even if it's herself." So then they fight. And you guys just sit there and watch as they're rolling around.
That was a big fight, by the way. I remember shooting that fight. I think it was almost all, Roxanne and Alex.
Except for when they rolled down the steps. I think those were the stunt doubles there.
Yeah, I think they may have used the doubles a couple of times, but mostly it was them.
It was them, yeah.
And I remember filming this. It was a long fight.
Mm-hmm.
And fights are hard to film, you know, because... Mm-hmm. Because the punches and the hits and things don't always look good from the same angle. So you got to keep switching the angles around.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job. It was very intense, really good fight.
Yeah. A lot of the fights that were choreographed for Voyager, they're very specific because they have to look good on camera. You know what I'm saying? And that, you know, a lot of times when you're fighting, there's certain moves that just don't play well. They don't read well on camera. And so, that's always an interesting thing for fans to know, that Hollywood fights are definitely staged to look good on camera, but really they wouldn't work that well in real life, I think.
No, probably not.
Yeah. The blood fever is purged after Torres is victorious and knocks Vorik unconscious. Right?
And she falls right into Paris's arms, if you noticed at the end.
Yes, falls I did right, see that.
Like she needed some comfort with someone that she trusts.
And, oh yes, she does. And it's you
in Paris's arms. Yeah,
it's you.
Yeah.
We jump to the turbo lift.
Mm-hmm.
Paris and Torres.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Very, very feeling very awkward standing there talking, and basically Paris says, "You know what? I wouldn't mind seeing your Klingon." Paris basically says, "I wouldn't mind seeing your Klingon side again," and she says the immortal words. "Be careful what you wish for, Lieutenant."
As she walks out. Yeah.
And you're just closed on. And I want to say something. You had mentioned in a prior episode, I think it was the last one we reviewed, you said that in the turbo lift, it looked like I was wearing eyeshadow. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. That's
well,
right.
You look like you had makeup on. Extra
really?
Makeup. Yes. I said,
wait
a minute.
Maybe it's the
I think it's the turbo lift. Yes. Yeah, something in the turbo lift makes Paris and Torres look like they're in drag, basically. So anytime we walk in,
makeup or something.
Yes.
Well, it's got those lights all around, and they're low. Mm-hmm. They're from the floor too. So maybe, maybe that was it. One thing I want to say about the turbo lift, though, is it kind of felt like when we were in the tunnels, Torres had a moment of truth where she really expressed to Tom her feelings. Maybe she was in Ponfar and, you know, he thought it was manipulative, but I think it was very much the truth, what she said.
Yeah.
She said it very passionately and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And then here in the turbo lift, Paris gets a chance to kind of spill his truth. And he's very sober and very real about it. And he says, you know, I really, basically he opens up his heart and says, I got some feelings for you too. And I like what I see. And that doesn't scare me. And like you said, you know, he ends his much longer speech with, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing that Klingon side again, mm-hmm. basically.
Like, yeah.
So I thought it was a nice kind of echo that they both had moments of, for the relationship, for them to both sort of express all this stuff that's happened off camera that we've never seen until now.
Yeah.
So now that foundation, it's kind of like what we talked about, you know, with some of the Janeway and Chakotay stuff, like there's been a lot of stuff on camera that mm-hmm. we've seen, you know, mm-hmm. let's go drink champagne and take a sunset cruise on Lake George, or mm-hmm. let's go, you know, going to the resort program together and hanging out. You just see a lot of it, a lot of their chemistry and their attraction to each other on screen, but you didn't see any of Tom and B'Elanna's until this episode. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that I really liked that turbo lift scene. And it was, I realized the second awkward conversation after a situation like this, because Paris had it with the captain after in Threshold at the end, after he had kidnapped her and taken her to the planet, and they wake up in sick bay. And he had a little awkward conversation there.
There you go.
Now he's having another awkward conversation.
You are the king of awkward conversations, Tom Paris.
Yeah. And then we have a nice little scene, a moment at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to the planet and they're helping the Sicarians, you know, hide from these invaders. And they come upon a skeleton and they realize it's a Borg.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're clearing away the ruins, and Chakotay shows Janeway, look, while we're clearing away the ruins, we found the remains of one of the invaders who destroyed the colony. And then, of course, we see it's a Borg skeleton.
Yep.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
So this is the first introduction of the Borg into our part of space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, from what I understand, the Borg originate in the Delta Quadrant. So this is their home
quadrant. But this is our first
time seeing them, correct?
First time on our series of that word coming up, I think.
That's right.
I don't think we've even talked about them.
No. But we know who they are, you know?
Yeah.
We just haven't spoken about them until now. So this is the very first time.
Yes, this is the beginning of some new things. Bum bum bum.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. What was your theme? What was your theme for this episode?
I want to hear your theme first, and then I'll
here's my theme.
Yeah.
I came away with, you can't fight natural instinct. That you can't fight your nature. Things that are just a part of who you are, whether it's Ponfar, whether it's the feelings that Tom and B'Elanna have for each other, you can't fight it. You have to let nature take its course.
I'm going to encapsulate that into even a more simpler statement and theme or lesson, and that would be true to your heart.
Yeah, I like it. Nice.
All right.
Well, that was fun. Blood Fever.
Blood Fever.
Yes.
All right, thanks, guys. Yeah, for tuning in. Join us next week when Robbie and I will talk about the episode Unity. Unity. Ooh. Yeah, I like that name. I like one-name episodes.
Those Unity. I know the director of that episode.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, that'd be you.
My director. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
See ya.